Welcome back to Open Line on WOSU 820 and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. I'm Mike Thompson. My final day of sitting in for Fred Anderle. Fred will be back tomorrow and Friday, although for an encore presentation, Open Line Classics, we call them. So you can listen to Fred tomorrow and Friday, and then Bob Singleton is in next week. But it's been a pleasure sitting in for Fred, and it's been fun talking to callers and to listeners and to his guests, obviously, over the past couple of weeks. A lot of little things going on this week we can talk about during our open forum, 292-8513, 292-8513, or you can email us at openline@wosu.org. You pick the topic, you pick the agenda, and we have phone lines open if you'd like to jump in now. Presidential politics. Barack Obama is in the final leg of his Middle East trip, now focusing on the Israel-Palestinian peace process, visiting Jordan and now Israel today. Before that, of course, he was in Iraq and Afghanistan. The big controversy, so to speak, of the week anyway, is this whole debate over a timetable or a general time horizon or a schedule, whatever you want to call it. The Iraqi spokesman, the Iraqi government is now saying, yeah, you know, we kind of agree with Barack Obama that, you know, by the end of 2010 at least, we'd like to see the American combat forces out. And that fits with what Barack Obama has been calling on as a 16-month timetable after he's elected, should he be elected after he's inaugurated, for a troop withdrawal. He's kind of wavered on that, saying that, you know, of course, he's going to listen to the generals on the ground, so to speak, and then the troops on the ground and the commanders on the ground. But after he took a little bit of heat for seemingly wavering on his 16-month promise, he backtracked and said, look, I'll listen to the generals, but ultimately it has to be the commander-in-chief's decision as to when troops should be withdrawn. And of course, he says he would like to see more troops in Afghanistan. He thinks they're more necessary there and needed more there than they are in Iraq right now, which the news would tend to indicate. So the question is, what do you think of Barack Obama's trip? Is it just theater? Is this just for the cameras to make him look more presidential? Or does he look out of his element? He wears those, you know, designer sunglasses and open collared shirts as he's flying around in the helicopters next to General Petraeus. Does it make him look more presidential? Does it bolster his foreign policy credentials? He still does not have any military experience, unlike John McCain, who's got an extensive military record. I did note that we have not seen Barack Obama riding in a tank or wearing a flight suit on this trip. So interested in your perspectives on the success of this trip, whether it helps his presidential campaign. Was it a mistake on the part of the John McCain campaign to sort of goad Barack Obama into traveling to Iraq? Would he have gone had the McCain campaign said, you know, he's never been to Iraq. How can he talk about troop withdrawals? How can he talk about the success of the surge or the failure of the surge if he's never been on the ground in Iraq? Well, he went. And he's been dominating the news all week, doing interviews with top news anchors who have traveled with him on this campaign trip or policy trip, depending on your perspective or how you'd like to spin it. So Barack Obama's Middle East trip wraps up this weekend, and he returns to the United States. Last night I was watching this is just sort of a symptom or a characteristic of the 24-hour news cycle combined with the American interest right now in all things politics and with having 300 channels on your cable television system. I was flipping. There was nothing really on that I wanted to watch. The conversation with Governor Strickland on education was, well, somewhat interesting. I lost interest pretty quickly in that. I was flipping around, and breaking news on CNN was a John McCain gaffe. I was like, well, what's this? So I stayed, and I watched. And I had to watch for 15 minutes before they actually got to talking about the gaffe. And apparently he had said at some point yesterday that the awakening of the Sunnis in Anbar province in Iraq, which has led to a decrease in the violence, he said that it happened after the surge or coincided with the American increase in troop levels in Anbar province, when in fact it had started before then, you know, a matter of months before then. But the commentators were just going nuts, saying what a huge gaffe this was, and this will hurt the McCain campaign and blah, blah, blah. And it comes on the heels of his other gaffe where He mistakenly said that Iraq borders Pakistan, when of course he meant Afghanistan borders Pakistan. It was just a simple gaffe in geography. Were they simple gaffes? Was it? And the discussion went to, were they simple gaffes or were they symptoms of his advanced age? And this, how's the Barack Obama campaign going to use these and in the months and weeks ahead? And it's going to hurt the campaign. I'll bet by tonight's CNN Anderson Cooper special that the gaffe is long forgotten. We've jumped onto something else. It's just that insatiable beast that has become cable news and its coverage of all things politics, because people are watching this race and watching it very closely. And every night you have to have something new. You have to have some kind of breaking news element that flashes across the bottom of your screen to stop people like me who are just clicking through. 292-8513, 292-8513, if you'd like to weigh in on this issue, other issues, streetcars, other things we can talk about. The plan is on hold, but we're getting some indications as to what future plans might look like. Still on presidential politics, two polls out yesterday concerning John McCain versus Barack Obama in Ohio. Rasmussen poll has John McCain with a 6-point lead. The public policy polling out of North Carolina has Barack Obama with a 6-point lead. So who do you believe? Do you believe either of them, or is it why would one poll have McCain leading by 6 and the other would have Obama leading by 6 here in Ohio? Both polls had a margin of error, I believe, around 3%, so maybe they're not that far off as it would appear. 292-8513, 292-8513, if you'd like to join in our discussion. The Republicans have a candidate for Attorney General, D. Michael Kreitz. He lives here in the Columbus area from Powell. He is a managing partner in a Columbus law firm. He has an extensive military background, and he put Pete Rose in jail. So this is who the Republicans have picked to run for Attorney General in the state of Ohio 2 months after Mark Dayen left amid huge scandal. I'm not sure. Michael Kreitz has got an incredible resume as an attorney, as a prosecutor. No doubt. If you put his resume next to Mark Dayen's resume, for instance, I don't think there would be any comparison as far as the qualifications as a lawyer and the things he has accomplished. But from a political resume standpoint, certainly the B team, maybe even the C team as far as name recognition goes. Richard Cordray is the Democratic candidate. He's already got a month's head start and has been raising money like crazy. He holds statewide office, very well respected, very smart, trouble-free Jeopardy champion. Far different candidate than Mark Dayen was even when he was running the first time. Michael Kreitz seems to have a very uphill battle. I Googled him yesterday because I didn't know much about him. I Googled him yesterday and I found his name on a website that sort of tracks political figures and where they are now. And the latest entry was he's still alive and it was dated 1993. So I mean, that's good news, right? But I'm not sure it helps in a statewide race. So if you'd like to talk about the Republican who is running for Attorney General, sure, he's an excellent attorney and he's got a great record. He, you know, prosecuted, in addition to Pete Rose, drug dealers and things like that as a U.S. prosecutor under President Reagan and the first President Bush. But not a household name, and that's going to be his big challenge in the next couple of months as he tries to win the seat that was vacated by Mark Dayen. Streetcars. Supporters seem to be tweaking the debate. They're not really changing the debate because they have said this all along. But now you're hearing more and more that this is a down payment. A down payment on a citywide, region-wide mass transit system with permanent fixed rails. Chester Jordan last week at a debate I moderated at the Columbus Metropolitan Club, he stayed on message. He kept saying that over and over and over again. This is not just a 2.8-mile line that is running up High Street that connects downtown to the southern portion of the Ohio State University campus. This is the first step in light rail and streetcars all over the city, connecting offices and homes all over the city. So I think you're going to see that trumpeted more and more. The mayor has requested the city council add $300,000 to continue the study, to look at different ways of financing. And in this memo that the mayor sent to city council, he emphasized more than he has in the past, I believe, the search for federal funding. And I think that would really help sell the streetcar plan to the average folk the average person in Columbus who thinks streetcars would be nice but doesn't like the $103 million price tag in the city, basically picking up all of the cost. The search, if the city could get more federal funding, especially with a new administration coming in, whether it be McCain or Obama in 2009, that would make it a much easier sell. Governor Strickland had his education conversation last night. It was at our facility at WOSU at COSI. It was broadcast live on – not live, but it was broadcast delayed on WOSU TV 34 at 10 o'clock last night. We may have carried it live on our digital channel, and of course it was live on the web as well. It was the first of many conversations he's going to have concerning education reform. Right now we're basically saying that we need smart people to have a good, solid workforce in Ohio. This is the easy part. That's an easy sell. The next sell, which is probably going to come next year, is how are we going to pay to get all those smart people to help the economy in Ohio? We'll get to that as well. Let's go to the phones. Warren, you're on Open Line. Go ahead, Warren.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on two things in your opening statement.
Sure.
The first is, you know, Barack Obama is running a pretty good campaign. But in previous years, Clinton, there are a number of presidential candidates and presidents that haven't had any significant military experience, indeed, none. So the criticism that he does not have military experience, I think, is somewhat unfair. That's not a criteria for being commander-in-chief. Mm-hmm. And because you were in the military, which I was, I ran into an awful lot of knuckleheads when I was in the Army. So the suggestion that you're somehow better prepared because of that experience, I think is bogus.
In a time of war, I think, doesn't it help if you're going to be the commander-in-chief during a time of war, military experience would help?
No, I don't think so. I think when you have a professional Army, you know, professional Marines, Air Force and Navy, we have a Coast Guard. Those are the professionals, and those professionals need to advise a commander-in-chief. There are very few instances where the leader has all the experience needed to run all aspects of the operation. And I think that applies to a president as it does to any CEO of any company. This notion that because I wore a uniform at some point in my life that I'm and therefore a leader is a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Warren, anything else?
Yeah, the other thing I wanted to mention is I listened to your interview with Roger Lowenstein. I read both of his books, mm-hmm. When Genius Failed, and I read America Aging. He is absolutely right. It is a crisis and will be a greater crisis as time passes. I would like to mention, however, that in the state of Ohio, we have five or six pension funds that are really very, very strong for the most part when compared to all other states in the United States, with probably one exception, which is probably Florida. So as we think about the management of pension assets, I'm pleased to tell you that in the state of Ohio, the governance and the stewardship has really been superb.
Okay. Thank you, Warren.
Welcome.
Appreciate your time. 292-8513, 292-8513, if you would like to join in our conversation. Open forum for the next – our general time horizon for this open forum is for the next 40 minutes here on WOSU 820. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Fred Angeli today on Open Line. And let's go back to the phones. And, Paul, you are next on WOSU.
Mike, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. You know, I was listening to a NPR broadcast the other day, and they were talking about some embedded journalists that came back from Iraq,
mm-hmm.
and they were in actual units that were in some pretty heavy combat. And one of the female journalists that was embedded was involved in a situation where they took incoming fire, and she got a firsthand taste of what incoming fire is and what it's about. And when she got back, she had a very difficult time relaying her experiences because she'd been diagnosed with PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of these journalists who get tagging along with some of these military units, no matter where you are and what war you are, I think they need some preparation. And I'm not sure they're getting it. because not only do they become a distraction from what they're doing themselves, but they can become a distraction for the military units that are out there fighting. And with situations like in Vietnam, which was an insurgency war, and what we're fighting here in Iraq, which is also an insurgency situation, things become so spontaneous. You're not sure who's who half the time.
Yeah.
And I really think some of these journalists need to get some time, what we'll call indoctrination time, for lack of a better term, before they go.
Yeah, I don't know how much training is happening now. I know before the invasion that journalists did go on, they did go to military bases and military units and trained with them and sort of were prepared for what they might go through in the invasion back in 2003. They are still embedding with units now. I'm not sure. I don't know how much training they are getting in the current embed system. And I'm not sure that any training is going to, if you've never experienced a rocket-propelled grenade attack or an IED attack, I'm not sure any training is going to prepare you for that.
Well, that type of situation, no matter how well you're trained going in, you're right, it doesn't help. And our armed forces are probably some of the best trained in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But the dynamics of it still play pretty heavily on one psyche when you come back.
Yeah. You do make
and
a good point.
I don't
point.
Know whether there's a debriefing that needs to be done or what, but I think some of these journalists really need to give it some second thought before they go over there.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny that each war has a different system on how reporters cover the war. And most people think this one is working fairly well, but it's certainly not perfect, and I'm not sure it's ever going to be perfect.
All right, Mike. Thanks so much.
Thanks for the call. 292-8513, 292-8513. Let's go to line three. And Jesse, go ahead. You're on the air, Jesse.
Hi. Just a couple comments. First of all, I don't think anything about war in general is ever going to be perfect, whether it's the coverage or anything. But, you know, I hear people talking about, you know, we're in the middle of a war. You know, why don't we have somebody with war experience? The person who got us into the war didn't have any war experience. And, you know, we might be getting ready to go into a depression, and I don't hear anybody asking if we've got anybody with depression experience. You know, maybe that's a sarcastic question.
Sure.
But, you know, I think it's kind of ridiculous. There's, as you said, we got 24-hour news now, and we have to fill it with something. But, you know, there's real issues out there every day that are affecting people. The war is definitely a big one. I talk to a lot of families with, you know, with sons, daughters, brothers that are overseas, you know, and it's rough, but it's rough over here too. And, I get disturbed sometimes at people's lack of perspective on everything that there is.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate the call. 292-8513, 292-8513, if you'd like to speak with us here on WOSU 820, open line with Fred Anderle. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Fred today. I think I mistakenly hit the red button again. I haven't done that in a while, so I think it might have been Chris who I just mistakenly dropped from the call. She was going to talk about light rail, so please call back. I haven't done that in 2 weeks. I did a lot the first week, but that red button is so tempting, even though it says in big letters, drop. I still keep hitting it and knocking callers offline. 292-8513, or you can email us at WOSU.org. Getting back to the streetcar debate, it was really an interesting debate to moderate last week. It was fun. Bob Weiler was very colorful in his opposition to extending light rail. He basically was saying, or extending streetcars or building streetcars, basically saying COTA's there. He says there's a bus that runs down. If you sit at a bus stop on High Street along the route of the proposed light rail, there's a bus that comes by every 3 or 4 minutes. So you don't need a streetcar. Just use the bus. But people are not always using the bus. He admitted a lot of times those buses are empty or near empty. He said that Bob Weiler said the city already has a mass transit system, and perhaps the quote of the debate, he says that we have a mass transit system. It's called the freeway, and he's right. I mean, that is a mass transit system. Is it the best mass transit system? I don't know. A lot of people think it's pretty good because they're using it, and they don't want to spend the money on a light rail or a streetcar system. But as I was mentioned, Chester Jordan from the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission was really pushing this whole down payment message. This is the first step in a citywide fixed rail transportation system. And this is, you know, that's an easier sell, I think. But you have to get that first step paid for and built, and that's where I think it's a tough sell. $103 million for 2.8 miles of light rail. It really is going to get a small portion of the population to work every day. They will, they say, create economic development. Along that line, pretty optimistic projections. I think 90,000 conventioneers, they predicted, would new conventioneers would come to Columbus for conventions if the city had a streetcar line. There'd be 3,000 new jobs, construction jobs, and jobs to maintain and run the streetcars as well. So if you have still like to weigh in on the streetcar system, 292-8513, 292-8513 is our number to call here on WOSU. We have an open forum this hour for the next half hour or so. The conversation on education, we're going to hear more and more about education reform in the next couple of years. Governor Strickland held his first conversation last night. These are invitation-only conversations. The administration, Strickland administration, says they are invitation-only because, you know, we can only fit a couple hundred people at our studios down at WOSU at COSI, and they're invitation-only because we can't have everyone. The critics would say that, you know, only the choir is coming, the people we've already heard from. But I think that, you know, as long as you invite everybody from business groups, from education groups, from parent groups, from all the groups, you probably can get a good sampling of the population in these conversations. And they are accepting comments via email, and certainly you can write the governor yourself and write his education folks and the Department of Education on your own. If you'd like to join in this conversation, the real rubber is going to hit the road when he starts talking about how to pay for it. The funding system has been ruled unconstitutional several times. It really has not changed. The funding system has not changed. The state has pumped more money into public education, K through 12, but the system itself still relies heavily on property taxes, and that's what the Ohio Supreme Court has said is unconstitutional. Let's go to Bill. You're on the air. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I'm calling in about the light rail debate.
Sure.
I grew up in Boston, so mm-hmm. I had the benefit as a kid of riding on what's called light rail, and of course subways and trolley cars and trackless trolleys and buses. We need a system of a lot of different modes of transportation, but this showboating trolley down the middle of High Street, where, as Bob Weiler points out, you can catch a bus pretty much any time of the day, that's just looks like a game that somebody's playing.
Mm-hmm.
The people who really could benefit from extended mass transit and would add to the community are in light rail locations like Delaware County or Pataskala or the places where there are existing train tracks running through them.
Mm-hmm.
I was just in Minnesota a couple weeks ago. They have a light rail system that's not very extensive, but
it's very popular.
Distance.
Yeah. It runs north-south. I think it runs from the Mall of America up north down all the way to the airport through downtown.
Right.
It was Jesse Ventura who pushed that through.
Oh, really?
Of all people. He was the big champion for the Minneapolis light rail. It was controversial to start, though. There was a lot of opposition from what I understand.
Sure.
And it's very popular, and now they're looking at extending it routes. And the bridge, the I-35 bridge that collapsed last year,
uh-huh.
as they are rebuilding it, they are building it with a light rail component.
Mm-hmm.
So when this bridge is complete, there will be room for a light rail line across the Mississippi River to have an east-west light rail. So it's worked there. But people who live in Minneapolis, they love the buses up there too. Their bus system run before light rail even came in was very well regarded. It's still very well used. So. That's the slight difference between here and there, but it's been very popular up there. You're right.
Well, another style of doing it, I think, is the Chicago plan that the first Mayor Daley had, where they put train tracks in the middle of the highways as they were being expanded,
mm-hmm.
What you and I would call median strips,
yeah.
But Mayor Daley called them medium strips.
Mm-hmm.
So there are other ways to do it. It just seems that the trolley on High Street
mm-hmm.
Is just a variant of those goofy little jitney buses that are made up to look like old trolleys
mm-hmm.
in tourist locations.
Yeah.
And that just seems surplusage. Okay.
Thanks for the call. 292-8513. If you'd like to jump on, we have a couple people waiting. We'll get to you after a break here as Open Line continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Next time on Day to Day, how do you attract business to a poor rural area? How about rodeo? New Mexico's investing money to wrangle the sport's biggest events.
It's amazing how doubled the contestants, doubled people in the stands, doubled probably the economic impact to the community.
Converting a culture into cash.
Rodeo is just a way of life.
Look at this.
Next time on Day to Day.
Day to Day begins in 30 minutes starting at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning, I'm Amy Jurevich. It is 71 degrees at 11:31. Thanks for joining us for Open Line this morning. WOSU presents Jazzu's Big Band Bash, featuring Helen Welsh and the Columbus Jazz Orchestra. Come swing and dance with the biggest hits from Glenn Miller, Benny Goodman, Duke Ellington, and Louis Armstrong, all from the big band era. This Friday, July 25th at 8 p.m. at the Columbus Zoo. For more information, visit jazzartsgroup.org. And don't forget, you can now get all the day's news from All Things Considered and the business news from Marketplace, now on WOSU 89.7 FM, weekdays from 4 until 7 o'clock.
Support for WOSU comes from the OSU Richard M. Ross Heart Hospital, improving, innovating, and advancing heart care for now and for the future. The Ross Heart Hospital. More information at medicalcenter.osu.edu.
Welcome back to Open Line on WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Mark Thompson, sitting in for Fred Anderle. Let's go right back to the phones. And Amy, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I have two things to comment on, and first would be the light rail system that's being proposed.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with the last caller. It seems to be a bit of sensationalism that this current mayor seems to be embracing, and it would be a much easier sell. I was at the last hearing at City Council. It would be a much easier sell if he would start with something larger that's not overlapping our bus system.
The problem with that is the cost, Amy. I mean, it would cost a lot more money, and that's, I think that's the what they're struggling with is balancing the cost versus a first step in a rail system.
And I truly believe that he would be better served if he would take care of the people who are living in the inner city and spend more money on our park system, which is being horribly depleted financially and at the expense of trying to attract tourists. I think he would be attracting more tourists if he would pay more attention to our park system. I also believe that more people would want to relocate businesses here if they see that our park system is up and running. All those recreation centers are so understaffed, it's ridiculous. And the money keeps going out of that funding, or that fund keeps being taken, diverted, and taken away from that fund. And it's a nightmare what's happening with our park system. And that system also plays into our education system, which I'm glad that someone's paying attention to it. I think that more emphasis must be placed on creativity, that's what's going to keep us out in front in a world market. We have to be where China is now, where we were 100 years ago with the Industrial Revolution. So we have to foster more creativity in our school system so that we can continue to be the idea makers.
Okay. Thank you, Amy. 292-8513, 292-8513. If you'd like to join our conversation, we have a few lines open. Phones have been, you know, not too bad today, relatively quiet. Let's go to Pat. Go ahead, Pat. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I want to speak about the light rail system that the mayor proposed.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to say that rather than that, I think we need to have a train station in Columbus. We're the capital city of Ohio, and you have to leave here to catch a train anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be more beneficial for us as well as for people coming into the city.
Which should come first, the trains or the train station?
Well, I'm sorry.
That's the problem. That's the problem, Pat. We need a train.
Both.
Yeah.
You got to have both, yeah. idea.
Yeah, I think if Amtrak, I mean, Governor Strickland wants to resume rail service between Cincinnati, Columbus, and Cleveland, and I think a lot of people would welcome that. Once that service is restored, you'd have if it is restored, you'd have to have some kind of train station. I agree. I mean, we tore ours down, but
Well, right. But we need a system. We need that system coming into our city, mm-hmm. so we don't have to leave in order to catch a train to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I lived in a city where they renovated the train station, an old train station that was really in tough shape, and they renovated it before they had train service. And then all of a sudden, as gas prices rose and highways got clogged up, the commuter rail it now uses that station. So the train station came first, at least the renovation of it, and then the trains came. And now I'm sure those trains are very popular with $4 a gallon gas.
Right. Well, we need a combination of the station and the train.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. 292-8513, 292-8513. Another infrastructure question or comment? Go ahead, Arnie.
Well, good morning. What happened last night to wit, the sudden and immediate closing of the Town Street Bridge mm-hmm. points out to me the complete failure of our city of Columbus to plan for the oncoming deterioration that it probably neglected to do. We're kind of lucky in a way that we had other means of road work completed when this bridge stopped almost dead with its 2 out of 9.
You're talking about the Town Street Bridge, which was closed yesterday because it was deteriorating.
And then subsequently, the other thing that also got to my mind is the replacement of the medics that was sorely needed for a long time. We're getting 5 this year and 9 next year, so somebody did a little planning.
Medics in the fire stations.
Yeah.
All the fire stations will have a medic now. Just for folks who didn't read the paper this morning or aren't quite up to speed, that's what the city is now proposing.
Well, and that's a very good thing. But what happened about 2 or 3 years ago is that there was a major crash of a fire engine because it was not being maintained sufficiently. It was too old. It had become obsolete, and that almost caused injury to some of the firefighters that mm-hmm. are around here. And that, coupled with what some of the previous callers have been talking about, is the total lack of a system of getting in and around town. Mm-hmm. We're relegated to buses because we gave up the streetcars some time ago. We got rid of the railroad station, and there is no passenger railroad of any quality. And you can look around in the country. There are 4 or 5 cities of note that are doing a whole lot better with their mass transit.
Okay.
And by the way, I worked for a long time in the District of Columbia when it didn't have anything, and now it's got a subway system
mm-hmm.
that works.
Yep. People love it.
You get out to the airport, you get out mm-hmm. to Dulles, you can get a whole pile of other things.
Yeah.
We lack all that. And maybe Morpik is part of this problem because they're always putting in their 2 cents, and they try to do a good job. But we see the rest of the state is crumbling,
okay.
And we as a capital, we're not crumbling except in our transportation system and the things that I've just brought to your attention.
All right, Arnie, I got to move on. 292-8513, 292-8513. Let's go to Paul. Paul, you're next on Open Line. Go ahead.
Hi, Mike.
Yes.
Have I got that right?
Yep.
You are doing an excellent job.
Well, thank you.
Subbing for Fred. Those are big shoes to fill.
Yes, they are big shoes to fill.
You're doing a fine job.
He can have his shoes back.
Yeah. Oh, no, I know. Yes, I understand. Two items. Number one, and this is kind of a beef I've had with Fred off and on for a while, not you.
Mm-hmm.
Fred has, I don't know, he keeps changing the rules about who can call and when they can call
mm-hmm.
and how often and this and that. Look, how about one caller 1 week? You know, it doesn't matter whether it's open forum or, you know, hey, yeah. One person, one call, 1 week. Easy to keep track of. I can't imagine how your screener figures out who called 1.5 or something.
Read your extensive statistical analysis. On the, no.
Right. No, I'm just saying it's confusing to the listeners. And I know that there are people, and I probably was one, who may be called a little more often than some people would care to hear about.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, not to put all the blame on Fred, but I was a part of those discussions as well,
when we started limited.
But, I mean, Paul, the basic reason for that is to give everyone a chance to take part. And I know that you may repeat callers may not always preclude others from talking, but I just think the overall goal of any radio station, especially this one, is to present a variety of opinions.
I agree.
And that's the only – we're not trying to penalize callers. We're not saying you can't call. We're just trying to mix it up a little bit.
You've mixed up the callers because they don't know did I call in 1.5 weeks or, you know, is this Tuesday? It must be Belgium. You know, something like that. Okay.
Yeah.
Enough said there. Yeah. No, I would like to note
– we appreciate our callers.
I know. I understand that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Enough of that.
All right.
You get my point.
No, it's a good point. I appreciate it.
Okay. I live in Worthington, I don't know, a few blocks from the railroad. I mean, I hear, you know, the whistle blow, so to speak, or horns, actually. But, you know, day and night, and that's fine. I grew up close to tracks. It puts me to sleep. The point is that there's this huge OSU, as far as I know, owns the grounds of what was at one point Harding Hospital, which is, I mean, directly, you know, adjacent to railroad tracks. Now, I don't know what the ultimate plans are. I suspect probably condos or something, but nobody wants to be right next to the railroad tracks. I mean, there's just this great big chunk of land, and, you know, I'm just thinking, okay, so I'm not a logistics expert, but it would seem to me that from the west side of Columbus along Route 161 and from Worthington certainly and from points north, and that's where, you know, obviously you need to get some experts in, this would be just a wonderful park-and-ride kind of situation that you could, you know, you could, I don't know how many cars it would accommodate, but, you know, light rail, why don't you start with what we've got?
Yeah, use existing lines and existing property.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the argument a couple years back, but now with gas at $4 a gallon, it might work a little better this time.
I think maybe it's a little more saleable than whatever, the Mike Coleman, who I respect greatly. This is just nonsense downtown. It's nonsense. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. 292-8513, 292-8513. If you'd like to take part in our conversation, about 16 minutes left, open forum here on Open Light on WOSU. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Fred Anderle today. Stephen, you're on the line. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, Mike, Steve. You know, we actually do have a train station downtown. It was built into the convention center along those tracks there. The thing with the light rail, and I agree with the caller from Boston. They were saying, you know, we need to concentrate on getting people in and out of town at further distances where there isn't any public transportation. They've been trying for years to use little buses, so forth and so on. And then they've just built this big, huge freeway going out to Newark area. And I never heard anybody say anything if they had room on that to accommodate light rail or some public transportation. They spent millions, I don't know how many millions, maybe even billions of dollars on that freeway that still isn't done yet.
Yeah.
Like an icon to the soaring gas prices here. But yet, public transportation, I never heard word one of it being considered to go out there.
Yeah, I didn't hear it out there. I did hear some talk. I'm not sure who was speaking, but there was some talk. You know how they've, between here and Cleveland, they've done a lot of work on I-71, widening it where it was two lanes at one point. They've widened it to three lanes, and if you drive up there, I think they're still doing work up there.
Well, they have to. It was hideous, man.
Yeah.
I know you've probably been on that freeway on a holiday or something, and it's like wall-to-wall cars nonstop all the way up to Cleveland.
But there was some talk that maybe while they're doing this, they should make room in the median, or medium, as I guess former Mayor Daley would call it, to put a light rail track. Again, it's the cost, because it's not just the median. It's every bridge.
between here and Cleveland. You've got to strengthen and build another bridge for the rail. So.
Right. The argument that he's saying that this is socialism or that using public funding for public transportation, it doesn't fly because, I mean, you're spending the same money on public highways that everybody uses.
It is a mass transit system.
And also the fact you lay down a couple tracks and on a pile of gravel with some rails, that's a lot less expensive than putting in concrete roads and the maintenance and the snow plowing and everything like that. I mean, the cost difference is just phenomenal. You got this huge monstrosity of a freeway going out to Newark, Ohio, where it's going to go from there, God only knows. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, 70 eastbound is a traffic jam every day.
Yeah.
I mean, public transportation is obviously a necessity. And you say, where's the money? We just spent it on the 161 freeway. We don't have it anymore.
All right.
Thank
you, Stephen. 292-8513. 292-8513. Yeah, I think if in cities that have put in light rail, streetcars, I think almost universally it has been a controversial move. There has been wide opposition to the initial line. But I think in a lot of those cities, that opposition has faded away. And they've become pretty popular. It's just that getting that initial toehold into the mindset of a car-centric community. Whether that can happen here, I don't know. Peter, you're on the line. Go ahead, Peter.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Hey, you're doing a commendable job. I like your show that you do on Friday night.
Oh, thank you.
34th, great.
Appreciate it.
I want to come to the mayor's defense. I'm not really hot on the trolley car. Streetcar idea myself, but I think he's done an excellent job in putting out the task force against crime every summer, promoting downtown. Different things he's done are really good, considering we're in very, very, very tight times budget-wise. I mean, we're going to come out of this. We have our lean times, and then we have our feasting times where we have more money and we know what to do with. And people got to realize that, you know, we're not always going to be scrambling to get gas. That seems to be on everyone's mind right now. There was a professor on, I think it was Talk of the Nation or one of those shows from NPR, and he said if you're really just spending, you're consuming 1,000 gallons of gas and it's just gone up $1 basically
more.
Well, your outlay is an extra $1,000. And he said that there were a lot of people rushing in to unload their SUVs and their trucks and they weren't getting what they were paying for them. They were taking losses anywhere from 13 to 17,000 on those vehicles. He said you were better off just hanging on to them and absorb that $1,000 extra cost until, you know, either you can later on you can get rid of the vehicle or economize somewhere else in your budget.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he looked at his records, and gasoline hasn't gone up as much as food, health care, other things that are central for us.
Yeah. It's just what happens, Peter, is as you drive to work every day and you see that sign changing from 250 to 280 to 310 to 350 to $4,
day.
And it just is in your face every day. And that's I think that's what it is.
That's what it is. Hey, you're doing a great job. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Peter.
All right, bye-bye.
292-8513, 292-8513. About 10 minutes left on this open forum on Open Line on WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Fred Anderle. Who's been waiting longer? It looks like Robin has been waiting longer. Go ahead, Robin. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Hey, for your caller in Worthington that lives next to the railroad tracks, hope he knows that that's a nuclear waste route. And when it comes to rail, I've always thought a small rail line from Dublin to the Honda plant would be very beneficial for the economy, especially for the people up there.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure there'd be enough people. I mean, isn't there a lot of people working at Honda?
15,000 people.
Yeah, I'm not sure they'd all take the rail. But and then you have
there's a lot of commuting that goes on as well. But I mean, you know, when the big three basically decimated the rail system in this country. And one last thing, and I'll take everything off the air.
Sure.
But I could recommend a guest for your show.
Please do.
One would be Dennis Kucinich, and secondarily would be Alex Jones.
Okay.
And
Forgive me, I'm not as familiar with Alex Jones as I am Congressman Kucinich.
Alex Jones runs a website called Infowars.com out of Austin, Texas, and it's a very highly politically charged website with articles that you don't normally see in the mainstream media because they basically sift through and spoon-feed what they want you to see.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things going on right now.
Like
mean,
the truth.
Well, you know,
I'm just kidding you, Robin. That's all.
Maybe, or even Dr. Jerome Corsi, who authored the book The Late Great USA. He's an opponent of the Trans-Texas Corridor, the North American Union, the possible aspect of the Amero. Very interesting stuff. I mean, in 05, just before I went to Cancun, I watched Vicente Fox say, hey, the North American Union will be inevitable. The merging of the socio-political and economic aspects of the Mexican, Canadian, and United States societies to merge is inevitable. And no one's talking about it. Bush has made all these agreements and circumvented Congress. No one's talking about it.
I think a lot of people are talking about NAFTA. I'm not sure about social
this is NAFTA on steroids.
Yeah, NAFTA, immigration. People are talking about it, but just in those corridors.
Well, the thing is about immigration, I get tired of hearing about immigration reform. What we need is deportation reform. And I know that sounds negative, but my wife's from Japan. She came here, taught herself English, went to college, paid for everything out of her own pocket. Not one dime went through her education compared to me, where the VA paid for mine and all you people out there for my service in Iraq. But no, I don't care where you're from, Japan, Ireland, Mexico, if you're illegal, you need to be deported. Because once you come over here illegally, you've instantly committed crime.
All right. Thank you, Robin. Good
appreciate
day. The call. 292-8513. 292-8513. Plenty of room if you'd like to jump on. We have about 7 minutes left on WOSU 820. A couple of housekeeping issues. I think it was Paul called up and was asking about our rules. The rules are really pretty simple. I think basically once every 2 weeks callers can come on and join our conversation. It's just to try to limit our so-called regular callers so they don't become de facto guests. Nothing against our regular callers. They add a lot to the show, but we just want to make sure that we have a variety of opinions and things like that. We've gotten some complaints about the number of times our regular callers are on. We've also got people who said that, you know, I like the regular callers. I know what they're going to say. But a lot of radio stations, not just this one, they limit the number of times that a certain caller can get on. And because oftentimes the callers pretty much say the same thing. If you've been listening to the show for a long time, you can understand that. All of our rules, so to speak, if you're interested in what our rules are on our website, wosu.org/openline. They're very reasonable restrictions, I think. And people who can take part in the show. We just want to generate a diversity of discussions. Alex Jones from Infowars.com, what the mainstream media is missing. We'll have to check it out. And Dennis Kucinich would be an excellent guest. He's been fighting for the impeachment of President Bush, even though his term is winding down now. I think it got to the House floor. It didn't go anywhere, but at least he got it to the House floor. A lot of people admire Dennis Kucinich for fighting for that. A lot of people think he's nuts for fighting for that, and he should move on to something else. 292-8513, 292-8513, if you'd like to join in our conversation. You can also email us. Our email address is openline@wosu.org. We know that is an option that more and more people are taking advantage of here at WOSU. We've gotten some comments via BlackBerry as well, which is kind of interesting for us old media types to get calls and comments via BlackBerry on Open Line. Ted Strickland is pulling off a nifty, call it administrative move, call it savvy political move. He is offering jobs to Republican lawmakers who are in competitive districts. Now, maybe it's just a coincidence, but the Ohio Republican Party doesn't think it's a coincidence. Jim Rossin of Springdale is apparently going to take a new six-figure position in the Ohio Department of Development, thus leaving his seat open and thus giving the Democrat
a better chance at winning that seat as the Democrats try to take control of the Ohio House, which they are very nearly about to do. If they can win a few seats in November, they can take control of the Ohio House. Of course, that would make Ted Strickland's job a little bit easier, although he's had a lot of success with the Republican legislature. But the Republican Party is calling it Ted Strickland's pay-not-to-play scheme. There's another lawmaker who is also rumored to be leaving to he is leaving. Robert Spada from North Royalton has informed the House GOP leaders that he is not going to seek re-election to his district up near Cleveland. And the word is that he is going to have a position that Strickland's going to appoint him to on the State Employment Relations Board. This is all according to the Columbus Dispatch this morning. So, you know, Ted Strickland, congressman from southeastern Ohio, a lot of questions about how he would do as a chief executive in Columbus. This congressman, possibly obscure congressman from southeastern Ohio, Duck Run, Ohio, has proven to be a pretty savvy politician here in Columbus. And this is just the latest in savvy political moves, whether or not he's just trying to bring – maybe he's just trying to bring bipartisanship to his administration and to state government and not being limited by only choosing Democrats to fill these positions. But the Republicans may have a point that he is trying to cherry-pick Republicans in competitive legislative districts in order to win control of the Ohio House. So something to watch as the weeks progress and as we head towards November. The lower races on the ballot are not getting the attention that obviously the presidential race is getting. The 15th congressional district race, we talked about it a bit last week on Columbus on the Record on WOSU-TV. Steve Stivers has had a good quarter, fundraising. He outraised Democrat Mary Jo Kilroy in the race to succeed Deborah Price. He outraised Mary Jo Kilroy by about $60,000 last quarter. Not a huge margin, but considering he got a late start and is the lesser-known candidate, that's pretty good. And he is pretty much drawn even with her when it comes to cash on hand. The criticism from one side levels on the other is that Steve Stivers is taking money from political action groups, oil companies, petroleum companies, the banking industry, an industry for which he was a lobbyist at one point. That's what Mary Jo Kilroy is saying. Republicans are saying that Mary Jo Kilroy is taking money from, you know, liberal groups based in Washington. And frankly, I don't think to voters all money is green wherever it comes from. I think that they could care less about the money in specific terms. I think voters worry about the overall impact that money has on politics and what kind of favors it brings from politicians who are elected. But whether it's a PAC giving the money or whether it's a bigwig business person who is donating the money to the average voter, I think it's really kind of mind-numbing and they don't pay much attention. What it does show you is that Steve Stivers is going to be competitive in the next few months in this race, as we expected it would be a very tight race. And there is an independent candidate in that race as well, Don Elijah Eckert, who is a social conservative, and he has been endorsed by Right to Life organizations because of his anti-abortion stand. And the thinking is that he is a greater threat to Steve Stivers, the Republican, than he is to anyone. Actually help Mary Jo Kilroy by taking some social conservative votes away from Steve Stivers. And she only lost by a few thousand votes 2 years ago, and that might be all she needs. That's it for Open Line. My thanks to the Open Line production staff, Linda Taylor, Liz Wick, Tyler Adams, and Amy Jurevich. They have made my fill-in stint much easier than it would be if they were not around. For Fred Andley, I'm Mike Thompson. This has been Open Line on WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820 NPR News.